Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Bhai Bhai ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Kiridaj Maharaj ki, Jaya Nitai Gopriman. So what did we discuss last week? Any other points?
Brahmanas must be qualified, and in our sampradaya, one takes non-initiation, he must remain qualified, otherwise it falls the name of the sampradaya. That Brahmana falls.
Good. Any other points?
The Lord purifies us continuously through various experiences, including the chanting.
Nice. Anything else? Any other points?
It is not the activity but the consciousness is desired. Spiritually, by intuition, we think that consciousness of attachment is too long. The process is developing that everything that leads to that goal.
The same context, we learn the example, the pujaris or the cook in the kitchen, they make the prasadam, they should really cook in the right consciousness, because that's the consciousness flows to the people who make the prasadam. It's very important for the cook to have a right consciousness by cooking.
Yeah, important. Anything else? Any other points?
The purpose is that the spiritual life begins from the tongue, chanting and glorifying the Lord.
We also discussed two points that are very important, like for deity worship. First one is cleanliness and secondly is punctuality. These are two very important points to be observed by deity.
Anything else? Okay. So, chapter 1 is called. So then we have the description of the three daughters of Swayambhuva Mani and Shatrurupa, whose names are? Very good. And Prasuti's children, her youngest daughter's name was Prasuti, and she married Lord Shiva. And then, this is where the pastime begins in chapter 2. Chapter 2 is called? So, Lord Shiva is in a mystic trance, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Daksha enters into the sacrificial arena, and Lord Shiva does not offer respect to him because he's absorbed in Krishna. But Daksha takes offense because Daksha thinks that he is my son-in-law, he should respect me. And he does not understand Lord Shiva's exalted position. So therefore he curses Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva does not respond because he's a Vaishnava. And Vaishnavas must learn not to respond when they are insulted. So Daksha leaves, but then the followers of Lord Shiva become affected by the modes of material nature, become angry and they curse the followers of Daksha, the Brahmanas. And then the Brahmanas, headed by Bhrigu Muni, curse the followers of Lord Shiva. Everyone becomes affected by anger and contaminated in consciousness, and then cursing and counter-cursing take place. So then, now Lord Shiva becomes very disappointed at the entire situation, and he leaves and goes to Mount Kailas, silently. So then, chapter 3 is called? Sati. So Sati sees that everyone in the universe is going to the second Yajna of Daksha, and herself and Shiva have not been invited, and she wants to go because it is natural that when everyone else is going to a festival, then you also want to go. But Lord Shiva says, do not go because your father is envious of us and he will offend me and you will become disappointed and then everything will become inauspicious. So he says to her, please do not go. But her motivation is that she wants to defend the exalted position of Lord Shiva, so then she leaves, followed by the followers of Lord Shiva. And then chapter 4 is called?
Sati
quits her body. So Sati goes to the Yajna, and she begins to describe the glories of Lord Shiva to Daksha to try to persuade him that he should offer respect to Lord Shiva and invite Lord Shiva to the Yajna. But Daksha remains adamant and stubborn, and he, out of pride, he will not offer respect to Lord Shiva. So then Sati, she gives up her body. She self-combusts her body, increases the fire in her body, and commits suicide. And then Daksha continues his Yajna in a hard-hearted fashion, even though his daughter has just committed suicide. So then chapter 4 is called? Frustration. So then Lord Shiva, he becomes very angry when he hears that Sati has quit her body from Narada, and then he creates one demon called Virabhadra. And Virabhadra takes the followers of Lord Shiva and goes to the sacrifice of Daksha and decapitates Daksha and the other followers of Daksha. Everyone is destroyed. The sacrifice is destroyed. So, at that time, Daksha is beheaded by Virabhadra. And Bhrigu Muni has his moustache taken, and Pusha has his teeth removed, and Bhaga has his eyes taken out. So, Lord Shiva, or Virabhadra, he destroys the entire sacrifice, and then he returns along with the followers of Lord Shiva back to Mount Kailas. So then chapter 6 is called? Brahma satisfied Lord Shiva. So all the members of this sacrificial assembly, they go to Lord Brahma and they say that we have committed a great offence to Lord Shiva. And Lord Brahma explains the exalted position of Lord Shiva, and he says that we must rectify this offence. We must go back to Lord Shiva. We must go to Lord Shiva at Mount Kailas and beg his forgiveness. So then everyone, along with Lord Brahma, all the devas, they go towards Mount Kailas. So there's a description of the beauty of Mount Kailas as they approach. Then they meet Lord Shiva, and they see that Lord Shiva is the greatest mystic. He's the most exalted personality. And Lord Brahma begins to offer respect to him. And Lord Shiva stands up and receives Lord Brahma, who is, in terms of their material relationship, he is the father of Lord Shiva. Even though Lord Brahma understands that Lord Shiva is more powerful and exalted than him. So then, Lord Brahma, he says to Lord Shiva that, please change everything that you've done. You've destroyed the sacrifice, you've killed Daksha. Please reverse all of this. Because everything has become inauspicious in the universe. So please rectify this situation. So then, Lord Shiva, he listens to Lord Brahma, and then chapter 7 is called? The sacrifice performed by Daksha. Just close the door properly. Just be left. So then, Lord Shiva, he explains to Lord Brahma that I have chastised the devas like that, and I've chastised all of these demigods, but they are childish and less intelligent. So I've not taken their offense very seriously. Even though I've chastised them, but I don't take it very seriously what they have done. So I will forgive them. I will give them my mercy and I will forgive them. And I will rectify everything. But even though I'm going to rectify everything, still those who have committed very severe offences, they must be punished. Yeah, they've already been punished, but they must be reminded of their offence. So therefore, he gives Daksha the head of a goat. He gives Bhrigu Muni the beard of the goat. And he gives Pusha, he says, you won't have your teeth back. And Bhaga, I think he gives the eyes back, but eyes of Mitra. And who was Mitra? We won't get into that now. So then, it is described that Lord Shiva, he goes back to the sacrificial arena with all of the devas. And then when they arrive back at the sacrificial arena, then they get back to the sacrificial arena and they attach Daksha's body to the head of a goat. And at that time Daksha awakens and he glorifies Lord Shiva because he's been purified by the chastisement of Lord Shiva, and now he respects him, he offers proper respect. So then he begs the permission of Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, and he begins a jagya once again. And when he begins to chant the mantras, Lord Vishnu appears himself, the Supreme Lord appears. And when the Supreme Lord appears, the effulgence is so great, it outshines the effulgence of Brahma, of Shiva, of all the personalities present. So everyone understands that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then, Daksha offers prayers to
Darshan.
I lost my train of thought.
Well, the deva starts offering prayers to Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, that's about to happen. I'm just saying there must be just something just in between. Okay. That's just thinking that there must be just some slight
points just in between those two situations.
Yeah. So Daksha, he's he becomes just on this, must be one point there that I'm just missing. Yeah, part of the sacrifice. So, at this point in time, Daksha, he reawakens, he performs the jagya. At that time, Lord Vishnu appears. Now, we have begun to hear about the prayers of the different devas and the different personalities who are there. So tonight, we'll go from verse 26 to 38, and we'll hear about the different prayers which are offered by the different personalities who are present. Now, Prabhupada's purports are quite amazing in this section because he brings out the most intrinsic points of each of the prayers of the different personalities he speaks. And I was studying today as I was preparing for the class, and it's quite amazing to see the way Prabhupada elaborates on each of the personalities' prayers and what he extracts from their inner intention in each of the prayers. So we'll begin tonight from verse 26 and we'll go to 38.
Two questions.
Okay, just give me 1 minute and then we'll answer the questions. So, what is the date next Tuesday?
28th.
Next Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay, so next Tuesday we'll do a revision of the 7 chapters. Tonight, tomorrow, and the next Monday we'll finish chapter 7. And then next Tuesday we'll revise all 7 chapters, like that. And then the following Monday, which the date is?
Maybe.
Third. Yeah, it must be. Maybe the third. Must be third. He's a doctor, so. You know. May the 3rd, so on May the 3rd, is it Chaitanya? May the 3rd?
It's 4th.
You're right, it's 4th. No, you're right. Sorry, I was wrong. So, on May the 4th, then we'll have the exam, which begins at 7 o'clock in the theatre. Very good. So, you had some questions?
Yeah. I thought you said that Lord Brahma offered his obeisances to Lord Shiva. But I thought as soon as Lord Shiva saw Lord Brahma, he stood up and he...
He offered his respect to Brahma, offered his obeisances to Lord, no sorry, Lord Shiva offered his obeisances to Lord Brahma because Lord Shiva understood that he was his father in terms of creation, but I said that Lord Brahma understood that Lord Shiva was more exalted and more powerful. So even though he offered respects because he is considered to be the son of Brahma, but still in terms of potency, Brahma understood that he's more powerful. Prabhupada explains it.
And the other thing is that when Lord Narayana appeared, it says everybody started speaking. So when they're speaking in the middle of the sacrifice,
it means that people were maybe speaking to each other, but then when the Lord appeared himself, he was so effulgent and so powerful, and he was so extraordinary that everyone just became silent. Everyone was amazed by his potency. Okay, so we'll continue. Okay. Daksha addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Lord, you are transcendental to all speculative positions. You are completely spiritual, devoid of all fear, and you are always in control of the material energy. Even though you appear in the material energy, you are situated transcendentally. You are always free from material contamination because you are completely self-sufficient. The priests address the Lord. Now the different personalities begin to offer prayers to Lord Vishnu. So we'll hear about the amazing prayers which are offered. The priests address the Lord saying, O Lord, transcendental to material contamination, by the curse offered by Lord Shiva's men, we have become attached to fruitive activities, and thus we are now fallen and therefore do not know anything about you. On the contrary, we are now involved in the injunctions of the three departments of Vedic knowledge under the plea of executing rituals in the name of Yajna. We know that you have made arrangements for distributing the respective shares of the demigods. Is that right, everyone?
The Vedas those who are serious students of the Vedas are very much attached to the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas. Therefore, these Vedavadis cannot understand is the ultimate goal of the Vedas, is to understand Lord Krishna or Vishnu. Those who have transcended the qualitative Vedic perfections rather than understand Krishna, who is never contaminated by the material qualities. Lord Krishna said this here, there is anantina, free from material contamination. In Bhagavad Gita 1.42, the good Vedic scholars have been deprecated by Krishna as follows. Yamimam Pushpitam Pajam Pravadanti Kavi Pushpita Vedavada Rata Partha Nanyan Pasti Vadina. Men of small knowledge are very much connected with the flowery words of the Vedas, and they said that there is nothing from the Vedas.
Sorry, any questions?
Deva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes that the Vedas cater to all the three kinds of people who want bhakti, mukti, as well as gratification, liberation, as well as So, it's up to the individual to appreciate, which is the highest quality. But based upon the ultimation that Vedas fulfill, everyone's
Good point.
What is the meaning of the word cultivating?
Karma. Karma, jnana, bhakti. So karma, fruitive activity means karma.
This is specifically means that sacrifice performed for elevation to higher planetary systems?
Yeah, it means sacrifice which is performed with some fruitive result in mind. The person's doing the activity because he wants something material from the sacrifice. That's the motivation behind the sacrifice.
So cultivating means that there should be some sacrifice on the part of the performer with some sort of an elevation within the meaning of the Veda. This karma is a very broad category. And I want to get into specific, precise meaning of cultivating.
Well, that's what it literally means. It's karma. Karma means, yeah, okay, broadly karma means activity. But then in this context it means some fruitive motivation. The person's doing the activity because he wants something material. That's why he's doing the yajna. Is that what you're asking?
Do you think this is in Kaitava Dharma by definition? Kaitava Dharma. Explain something like this, not ideal, which will be very
market day.
Is that what you're asking? Any other points?
Is it not any activities that has got bearing of good and bad, so that can be related to three modes of nature that can be done and considered as good activities. Only bhakti does not come into the category of good activities.
Yeah, well, any karma means it is fruitive. Like that, because jnana is not necessarily fruitive. Person may be devoid of most desires. Well, that's the fruit of activity means karma, broadly.
In the Upanishad also it is mentioned in, I think, probably the third verse or something, na karma lekar and I forgot the evan purvani
karmani jiji
rishi comes from something like
that. Evan sayi nana kita.
Na karma lekar. So there it is defined, what is fruit of activity. If one goes on working in this way, then karma is not.
So, the ultimate goal of the Vedas is to understand Krishna. Otherwise, if one performs Vedic sacrifice and Vedic rituals but does not come to the point of re-establishing one's lost relationship with Krishna, then it is Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. It is a useless waste of endeavor and time. Right? Because the point of the Vedic, the point of the Vedas is to re-establish one's lost relationship with Krishna. So Krishna is beyond the modes of material nature. He is not an ordinary personality. He is free from the modes of nature. And one can only realize Krishna through devotional service, because he has nothing to do with this world. So if one is performing ritualistic activities, but he's doing his ritualistic activities simply for something fruitive, then one will never realize Krishna, because he is under the jurisdiction of the modes of nature. So because Krishna is free from the modes of nature, if one wants to realize Krishna, one must perform activity which is free from the modes of nature, which is bhakti. This is how we realize Krishna. So, therefore it is considered, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained, that a Vaishnava is greater than a Brahmana. Because a Brahmana may or may not perform fruitive activity. He may perform devotional, he may be a Vaishnava. And he may perform yajna in order to please Vishnu, which is the point of yajna, as Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita. If we do not perform yajna, but it's not to satisfy Vishnu, then it is simply karma bandhana. It is simply fruitive and it binds you to this world. So in order to become free of this world, then one must perform his yajna or sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna. But a Vaishnava automatically does that. So he's greater than a Brahmana, because a Brahmana may worship Krishna if he's a devotee, or he may be fruitive. He may follow Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas or Jnana Kanda portion of the Vedas, but he may not realize Krishna. He may do all of his activities, but he doesn't realize Krishna. So therefore, a Vaishnava is greater. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained this. So a Vaishnava, even though he may be simple, and he may not be Brahminical by nature, this may be very simple. Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning of the third chapter, he may just be a simple sweeper. Right? You may just be living in Vrindavan and sweeping the streets for the benefit of all the other devotees, keeping everything nice and clean. Like you see some very simple devotees, you go to some bhajan kutir or samadhi of one of the previous acharyas, and just very simple devotee who is cleaning the area for the other devotees. So he is greater than a Brahmana because he has understood the supreme Brahman, the Parabrahman, which is Krishna. Right? So that is the supreme activity. So this is the end or the summum bonum of spiritual life of the Vedas. This is Vedanta, the end of the Vedas. Right? So one may be Brahminical and perform Brahminical activities, but if he's just fruitive, he's just doing those activities for fruitive reasons, then he is not as great as a Vaishnava. So it may be a very powerful Brahmana, just like we saw Daksha was very powerful, or Bhrigu Muni was very powerful. Very powerful Brahmanas, but they're not as great as a Vaishnava. Lord Shiva may have appeared to be very simple. He may have appeared to be unclean and unqualified in different ways, but he was greater than the Brahmanas, because he's a devotee. That's the point. So one can do all these fruity things. Now all the Brahmanas at the Jagya, they're waking up now and they're realizing the actual position. These are all the priests who are performing these Jagyas with Daksha. Now they're praying to the Lord. And Prabhupada is explaining within the purport that this is the actual position. What is the point of doing all your Vedic activities if you don't understand anything? Just like you go to some of the temples, right? You go to like the different Hindu temples and they do all the yajnas, and or you go to India, you know, and you drive your car down the road and they stop the car, and then you have to pay some money for the toll, and then the Brahmana comes from the other side, puts a red dot on everyone, you know, and then you throw a few paisa and he does some, you know, throw some petals and the guy, he has no idea. But I think this is the topmost thing, some ridiculous ritual. Or people come into the temple to see Radha Balava and they hit the bell in the four directions. Dung, 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 like that. come in, right? And then everyone goes in front of the deities and does all. Like, they don't even, no one even knows what they're doing. Right? And then you leave the temple and hit the other four directions. Dun, 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 dun. No one even understands. All rituals and everything, and brahmanas and everything, no one even understands. So the whole point of the Vedas is to understand Krishna. If you don't understand Krishna, then you haven't understood the point of the Vedas. The whole point of Vedic study is to understand Krishna. And if you don't understand Krishna, then Shrama Evahi Kevalam. It's all useless. It's just ritual. It's all external. Like that. So the devotee is the superior personality. This is established by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One time he went to a great assembly and he spoke many verses glorifying the position of the Brahmanas, because the Brahmanas are glorious. And the Brahmanas were very satisfied because they thought that he was going to establish the Brahmanas as superior to the Vaishnavas. So he established many, many, many verses to establish the superior, the exalted position of the Brahmanas. And then he said, however, the Vaishnavas are superior. And then he did so many verses and so much Shastric evidence to establish the Vaishnavas are superior even to the Brahmanas. Right? And when he left, everyone was just following him. Right, he's extolling him, treating him, everyone's just worshipping him. He's so learned and so powerful in his presentation. But this is the actual Siddhanta. This is the actual point. One must understand. So. Any points?
Who has what happens to those people who follow the Vedas just in a Brahmanical manner, not the Vaishnava, not realizing Krishna? What happens to them and what is their destiny?
They'll probably take birth as a human once again, and they just remain on the human platform, taking birth in a human form of life, but not really advancing anywhere. Just coming back again, doing more rituals, more rituals, more rituals, but not really going anywhere. Depends on the modes of nature they're in. If they're eating flesh and those kind of things, they'll become degraded. But if they're sattvic, you know, they follow the mode of goodness and all those things, but they're just doing rituals, then they'll just take birth as humans again.
And are the Mayavadis also follow the method of ritualistic worship or
some do?
Is there any connection to that?
Yeah, well, some people do. I mean, there's many people. Basically, everyone's very confused these days. You go to India, it's very confused. Everyone's very confused like that. So then Prabhupada, he spent 30 years preaching in India. Because his Guru Maharaj ordered him to go across the ocean. Right? He said, you go across to the Western countries and deliver them in English. But Prabhupada's own desire was to come back to India. Right? So he went there in 1965, and 1970 came back to India. And then between 1970 and 1977, Prabhupada practically spent 9 months out of every year in India, right, establishing Juhu, Vrindavan, Mayapur, and preaching around India. So his Guru Maharaj gave him the order to preach in the West, and he did that, but his personal desire was to live in India, because India is very confused. Because that was the necessity. Because people in India automatically respect the Vedas, but no one understands the Vedas. So Prabhupada preached in India, and then he established ISKCON very strongly in India. Now you see how, you know, ISKCON in India is just becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, Lokanath Swami is opening huge temples, and Gopal Krishnamurti is opening huge temples, Radhanath Swami has huge temples, and Bhakti Chiruswami is opening. It's just ISKCON in India is becoming very powerful now. Like that. That's good. That was Prabhupada's desire. So the people of India follow the actual purport of the Vedas. And what is the purport of the Vedas? Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is supreme. Even when Prabhupada's disciples went to South India, in South India everyone worships Ram. People don't worship Krishna so much. So they wrote back to Prabhupada and they said that, should we not preach that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, because people are not accepting this so much. Prabhupada said, no, you must preach that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Even though everyone there worships Ram and Narayan, like that. But Prabhupada said, no, you must establish this point. that Krishna is the original personality. Okay, you can continue to worship Ram, but you must understand Krishna is supreme. He is the original personality. Does that answer you? Mm-hmm. Someone else? Shaker?
2 points. Number one on Krishna, Bhagavan's side. We find that out of the 4 Vaishnava Sampradayas, it's only Sri Sampradaya which says that Lord Narayana is Shakti, whereas other three Vaishnava Sampradayas, they say Krishna is the source of consciousness. Whether it is Rudra Sampradaya, or whether it is Samadhi Sampradaya, or is it all the samadharas is that Krishna is the consciousness. The second point I wanted to make, as a child, we used to receive many brahmanas, especially from East Godavari, West Godavari, the fertile land and the area where full of Brahmins, who would recite Krishna is a Veda, Rig Veda, they're called Pansas. And in a particular metric way, they would recite for hours together, so much so that the whole body gets hard. Even in deep winter, the whole body sweats. So they would come for charity. So they would sit in a front yard and keep reciting, and father would give them charity. But when I recall back now, nor did I once hear from them Krishna is the Bhagavan's wife, except they were reciting every time they come in maybe in pairs, four Brahmin, five Brahmin, all of them come together in a rhythmic way. They would chant from Krishna's Veda or Rig Veda Pansas, but never would they say that, well, Krishna is the Bhagavan's wife, and they put it on their
lips.
In response to the Brahmani words of the Vedas, in Upakhyana Upadesh, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes that it's like licking the bottle of Nikmati outside. Initially, the Vedas may not even taste it outside. Just by knowing the verses and being able to recite.
What are the 3 departments for Vedic knowledge?
It's in the purport, is it?
No, translation.
Where is it?
Three departments of
Vedic
knowledge.
Where is it?
Three departments of
Vedic knowledge.
On the contrary, we are now involved in the injunctions of the 3 departments of Vedic knowledge under the plea of executing rituals in the name of
Dharma.
The 3 departments of the Vedas. Yeah, it could be Dharma, Artha,
Karma.
Remember the injunction of the 3 departments of the Vedic knowledge and the plain execution of the rituals in
nature. Yeah,
I mean, sometimes we say Jnana, Karma, and Yoga, but I'm not sure if it means that. It might mean Dharma, Artha, and Karma. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure.
Why is it saying the last sentence?
We know that you have made arrangements for distributing the respective shares to the demigods.
It is, but why is it saying this?
Because that's what they do with the yagyas. They offer the sacrifice to Vishnu, mm-hmm. and then the prasad then they offer to the different demigods.
Does it mean that Daksha went against even Lord Narayan? If he stopped...
He wasn't doing it for the pleasure of Narayan, that was the point.
I mean, if Narayan made the rule, and if Daksha cursed Lord Shiva that you can't have the shares, so he didn't have any authority, did he?
No, he was acting against the Vedic authority. He became proud and...
Against the Vedic authority?
Yeah, he was acting independently. Because he didn't invite Lord Shiva to the yagya. Uh-huh. The Lord Shiva was supposed to be there, so he became offensive like that. Okay. The members of the assembly address the Lord, O exclusive shelter for all who are situated in troubled life. In this formidable fort of conditional existence, the time element, like a snake, is always looking for an opportunity to strike. This world is full of ditches of so-called distress and happiness, and there are many ferocious animals always ready to attack. The fire of lamentation is always blazing, and the mirage of false happiness is always alluring. But one has no shelter from them. Thus foolish persons live in the cycle of birth and death, always overburdened in discharging their so-called duties, and we do not know when they will accept the shelter of your lotus feet. So these are the general people who are speaking, who are attending the Jagya. Now Prabhupada says in the purport that it is the duty, because what have they described this world as being? People in general are describing that this world is a place of suffering. If you read that verse, it very nicely describes allegorically what this world is like. It is just a place of suffering. There's no pleasure here, there's no happiness here. So therefore, the Prabhupada explains in the purport, the purpose of a devotee is to preach Krishna consciousness to relieve the suffering and to remove the ignorance of the conditioned souls. And this is the mandate or the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada said that this is our family business. Right? Hands up if you're a part of the family. Okay, I'll ask one more time. Hands up if you're a part of the family. This is ISKCON. Right? We're all part of the family. It's our family. Right, so what's our business?
Preaching.
Right, that's our business. Right, just like you go to India and you have Gupta and Sons, or you know whichever one you want and Sons. Right, it's the family business. Right, everyone in the family does the business. Right? That's the tradition. Right, you see in India even to this day. Right, it's the family business. Right, that's all you do. You live the family business. So in ISKCON, it is the family. Right, Srila Prabhupada is our grandfather. Right, and then we have our different fathers. Right, and we all have our uncles and our aunties and our cousins. Right, all of us here are cousins. Right? Some of us are brothers and sisters, but most of us are cousins. That means in India they say cousin, brother, right? Same. Yeah, whether your brother or your cousin brother, same. Family. That's how it is with family. So, we're family means we have a business. What is our business? It is to preach. Because there was no more powerful preacher in the history of the universe than Prabhupada. Right? He's the most powerful preacher that there has ever been. Like that. Why? Because he had the full mercy of the entire disciple succession. All the personalities behind him fully gave him their mercy. Right? And it is predicted in Chaitanya Mangala by Mahaprabhu himself in Goloka Vrindavan. He says, more Senapati Bhakta. He says, we will all go to preach. He says to all of his followers, we will all go to preach and spread Sankirtan. But then he said, one of my servants, Senapati means the general, the Senapati Bhakta, one of them, he will go and he will chase everyone else. Everyone else who tries to escape, he will go and find them. And he will chase them. So Prabhupada went around the world 14 times. Right? Just chasing after the conditioned souls. Wherever anyone tried to hide, he would go and find them. He spread this Sankirtan movement so powerfully. Right? So this is our family business. Somehow or other we have to spread that mercy. Somehow or other we have to expand the mission. Right? And if we do that, then we attract the attention of Krishna. Prabhupada writes, by preaching, you attract the attention of Krishna. Hands up if you would like to attract the attention of Krishna. Right? So then preach. This is how to do it. Right? Give Krishna consciousness to someone else. You have to give Krishna to someone. That is our business. Right? That's what we dedicate our lives to. And if we do that, then we'll get mercy which is beyond our imagination at the end of our life. Any points?
On the same point, as you said, Prabhupada was also asking devotees, bring some people, educated ones, and we want to beat them all the time. Wherever he was in Singapore or wherever he went, you know, get some Perth, wherever he stayed longer, get some people, bring some people, educated people.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that, you know, we go through the process of bhakti, and when we come to the stage of bhava, when you are first glimpse of the Lord, the goal of sadhana is to reach both in bhava stage.
Yeah.
And in the bhava stage, we are the first glimpse of the Lord. Here we see that there are materialistic devotees who are assembled within his and his sacrifice, and they are in direct darshan of the Lord. So how do we reconcile both things?
Somehow that's his mercy, because Prabhupada explains in this section that even sometimes unqualified people get to see him, like Duryodhana. And you've seen the Mahabharata, there are personalities who Prabhupada explains they saw him, they did not understand who he was, but they saw him. So when it comes to the material world, then he performs his pastimes, and sometimes unqualified people see him. That's his mercy, that's his arrangement. But they may not understand who he is, so they cannot take full advantage of his presence. Is that the answer? Yeah. If you think about it, then that's the situation that takes place. They don't have bhava, so they don't have qualification. But somehow the Lord is performing his pastimes in this material world, and out of his mercy, he is allowing people who are unqualified to see him, because it's mentioned that they do. And Prabhupada explains they see him, but they don't understand his position. Duryodhana tried to capture him. He thought, you know, who is this person? You know, he is not cooperating. Arrest him. And then Krishna showed his potency, and Duryodhana, he said, he must be someone powerful. Okay, so. But he didn't actually understand his position, because he didn't surrender to Krishna. He was envious of that. Somehow, in terms of the pastimes, they get to see the Lord. Does it make some sense? Or?
Could be because of his previous good activity. Because he was just cursed to forget everything. So they must have some community pastime.
Could be something.
Normally, sadhana bhakti leads to bhava, but I'm sure Bhani Swamiji are saying that there are exceptions. Lord, somehow bestows his mercy on some people, and they bypass this normal path of sadhana, and they have the mercy.
Yeah, that's true, because the Nectar of Devotion explains that when Krishna comes into the world, sometimes explains the Nectar Devotion, there were some forest people, like Aborigines, but they saw the Lord, and just by getting his glance, immediately they became devotees. Their love for Krishna awakened. So it's true that in his pastimes, and sometimes he... Is that okay? That's as much as I can say. Okay. Lord Shiva said, "My dear Lord, my mind and consciousness are always fixed on your lotus feet, which as the source of all benediction and the fulfillment of all desires are worshipped by all the great sages, because your lotus feet are worthy of worship. With my mind fixed on your lotus feet, I am no longer disturbed by persons who blaspheme me, claiming that my activities are not purified. I do not mind their accusations, and I excuse them out of compassion, just as you exhibit compassion toward all living entities." So Lord Shiva explains that his position is that he is situated in Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva means? Pure goodness. Means he's not affected by the modes of material nature. So that is his transcendental position. That he is beyond the modes. Is beyond their effects. So those of us who are affected by the modes of material nature, then we cannot transcend the bodily concept of life. We identify with the body. And as long as we identify with the body, then we remain affected by the modes of nature. So therefore we study the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us Divya Gyan. Divya Gyan means transcendental knowledge. It gives you Sambandha. Sambandha Gyan means you understand the difference between matter and spirit. And we must realize this point at some point in time. Because you cannot become a pure devotee until you understand you are not your body. As long as you think in terms of the body, then automatically the modes affect you. As soon as you understand that you are not the body, you are Krishna's eternal servant, then you can transcend the effect of the modes of material nature, as Krishna explains in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, Prabhupada says that one transcends the modes of material nature by becoming established in loving, transcendental service to the Lord. And Prabhupada often uses this term in his purports, and he uses in this purport. He says that anyone near the bottom of the page, this fact is corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who is fixed in the transcendental service of the Lord has surpassed all the material qualities. And just above that, he says, one should therefore always be fixed in Krishna consciousness, busy in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So transcendental loving service. Transcendental means your consciousness is absorbed in your swarupa. Your swarupa means your eternal relationship with Krishna. Right? That is transcendental to this world. It is transcendental to your bodily identification, to your false ego. It means you have to become absorbed in a transcendental level of devotional service. At this point in time, we do devotional service, but we're identifying with our material body, our material identity. We think I'm male or female, or according to the material body. But that is a temporary identity. That is not our eternal identity. So, therefore, the devotional service is not transcendental. Prabhupada says here in the purport, he says this, he repeats this phrase over and over again, transcendental, loving devotional service. Because love means prema. Prema means you are acting in the position of your transcendental identity with Krishna. That's how you transcend the modes of material nature. So that is what our bhakti is meant to evoke or re-establish. That's why it is said by Rupa Goswami that we perform our sadhana to rise to the level of bhava and prema. Because the point of doing our devotional service, of performing our devotional activity, our sadhana, is to rise to the platform where we transcend our bodily identification and become absorbed in our original relationship with Krishna. And when you're absorbed in that original relationship with Krishna, then you transcend the effects of the modes. You transcend the bodily identification and you enter into pure devotional service, loving devotional service to Krishna. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness. So that is what we must try to evoke. And that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches in Shikshastika. Any points?
Your perfect understanding of the eternal sarupa of all our acharyas, all of the devotees of Ganga, now, do we have any understanding on the eternal sarupa of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
No.
Why is that?
Prabhupada never said. Maybe because it would become cheap and become sahajiya-ish. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about who he was. He said, my name is Kamala Manjari. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes it, right? And Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur mentions, or has mentioned, his eternal position. Bhaktivinoda Thakur? His name is Kamala. 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 Yeah. What was his name? Starts with M. It's like Narayani or Nalayani or something like that. I can't remember the exact. I'm sorry. Something like that. So it has been mentioned, but Prabhupada did not mention. So I don't know why Prabhupada did not mention. But maybe because everyone becomes a Hajjit. Maybe, you know, that everyone would be, oh, Prabhupada is a gopi, Prabhupada is a manjuri. You know, we are all manjuris, so that's cheap. Then it becomes material. Like that. So why Prabhupada did not do it? That's up to Prabhupada why he did not do it. But he did not do it. He never said who he was.
Some disciples have mentioned
that
he was a
counterfeit. And some say he was a manjuri, so who do we know? I've heard some of his disciples say he was a cowherd boy, and they're definite he's a cowherd boy, and I've heard some of his disciples say that he's a manjuri, and they're definite he's a manjuri, so how do we know? No one knows.
Maybe he's both?
No, it can't be both. It's called rasa bas. It has to be one or the other. Okay. Yeah, it's not like that. He's in one or the other. Like that. It'll become revealed. Prabhupada says that our sarup becomes revealed by our spiritual master while we are chanting Hare Krishna. So if you think about that, that's the entire process. While you're chanting, your guru will reveal while you're chanting your sarup with Krishna. That is our process. That is what your Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is thinking. So hands up if your chanting has come to that platform. Hands up if your chanting is about 1,000,000 miles away from that platform. So what's our hope at this point in time? So let's get serious about our chanting. Instead of worrying about who Prabhupada is, let's get serious about our chanting, and then we'll understand who we are. And Prabhupada explains when the sun comes up, then you see who am I? Who is Krishna? And you see everyone else as well. So that's the actual point. Yeah, don't worry. You know, okay. So say we knew that Prabhupada was a manjuri, hypothetically. What difference does that make? Right, you still have sex desire. Right, you're still attached to this material world. It's still hard to still follow Vedantas. So then, why cheapen the whole thing? That's why Prabhupada was not in favor of making this whole thing cheap. Like that.
This question was asked to Prabhupada, and he became very angry actually on this issue. He said, what do you want to raise first? Then the second time also the same question was asked by his disciples. Then he became once again angry at least by first time. And he walked away.
Yeah, maybe. And there's one time that it says in Nectar of Instruction, in Upadesamrita, it says that one must follow in the footsteps of an eternal resident of Vrindavan. So devotees are saying to Prabhupada, you know, we have to follow in the eternal resident of Vrindavan, like that. Prabhupada said, I am that resident. He didn't say who he was. He said, I am that resident, you follow me. And he meant practically, by preaching. As we said, that's the family business. That's how you realize your sarup, by following Prabhupada's example, chanting Hare Krishna, purifying your heart and preaching Krishna consciousness, then we will understand our swarup by purification of the heart. Right? Not because, you know, something cheap or... Okay.
The action of Rashura, I mean, when he said that, because I think the whole sacrifice was frustrated, but his action was suitable.
Yeah, he said, Prabhupada says like that in the purport, that he should not have become angry and everything. But Prabhupada has already said previously that he did the right thing.
Yeah.
Like that, so. We take it, if you look at the whole pastime, we take it that he did the right thing.
Yeah.
Like that.
Because Sati quit her body, did he? She was a Vaishnava.
Yeah, he did the right thing. Sometimes Prabhupada says something in one of the purports in between, like he did that back in the beginning of chapter 4, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when he said Sati was a woman, so then she was, and then he changed later on.
Mm-hmm.
And he said actually she did the right thing. So sometimes Prabhupada says one thing, but you have to look at the whole 7 chapters. Okay. Sri Bhrigu said, my dear Lord, all living entities, beginning from the highest, namely Lord Brahma, down to the ordinary ant, are under the influence of the insurmountable spell of illusory energy, and thus they are ignorant of their constitutional position. Everyone believes in this concept of the body, and all are thus submerged in the darkness of illusion. They are actually unable to understand how you live in every living entity as the Super Soul. Nor can they understand your absolute position. But you are the eternal friend and protector of all surrendered souls. Therefore, please be kind towards us and forgive all our offences. So Prabhupada explains that when you're in the bodily concept of life, it's very difficult to understand the Paramatma and Krishna. So therefore it is necessary that we transcend the bodily concept of life. This is Bhrigu Muni speaking. Bhrigu Muni was in the bodily concept of life. I am a Brahmana. Right? Very attached to his bodily concept. But then, okay, you may be exalted in terms of Vedic calculation, but you do not understand your eternal relationship with Krishna. You cannot understand the position of the Paramatma. So you don't have a very exalted realization, factually. So therefore, one must transcend one's upadis. Lord Chaitanya says, I'm not a Brahmana. I'm not a Kshatriya. I'm not a Vaishya. I'm not a Sudra. I'm not a Brahmachari. I'm not a Grihastha. I'm not a Vanaprastha. I'm not a Sannyasi. And Gopi Bhattu Pada Kamali, or Dasa, Dasa, Anudasa. Right? I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the master of the gopis. Don't put your pens in your... So, I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the master of the gopis. So this is your transcendental position. One must transcend one's bodily identification. Right? If one wants to understand Krishna, you have to transcend the body. Otherwise you cannot understand Krishna, as long as you keep identifying. Oh, I'm a Brahmana, I'm a Kshatriya, I'm a Vaishya, I'm a Sudra, I'm a Grihastha, I'm a Sannyasi, I'm a Vanaprastha, I'm a Brahmachari. You cannot understand Krishna properly. So therefore you must go beyond this. Right? If you want to advance in devotional service, you must go beyond all this. So, Prabhupada explains later in the purport that how do we overcome this bodily concept of life? Right? Prabhupada, he writes some very special things. He says, the only remedy is to surrender to Vishnu and always pray to be excused. One should depend only on the causeless mercy of the Lord for deliverance and not even slightly on one's own strength. That is the perfect position of a Krishna-conscious person. Not to think, we have to learn not to depend on our own strength, but to depend on Krishna's mercy. So therefore, the perfect state of consciousness of a devotee is that we act like whatever we do depends on us. Right? Whenever we do a service, we have to think, I have to do this service properly for the pleasure of my guru, for the pleasure of Krishna. Right? So I must do it to the best of my ability. Right? So we act like it depends on us, but we pray like it depends on Krishna. Right? Even though we're doing everything to the best of our ability, actually the result will depend on Krishna. So that is our consciousness. That is the proper state of consciousness of a devotee. So we have to learn this. Not to be intoxicated by our own abilities. I am so fast at doing this. I am so quick at doing that. I can do so many services. I'm so expert. What was Daksha's name?
Expert.
Expert. Daksha means?
Expert.
But what happened?
And
became proud. Right? I'm so expert. I can do this, I can do that, I can serve my guru so nicely, I can arrange everything. Right? I'm so powerful, I have so much influence. And then what?
Goat's head.
So what's the point? So if you become proud, then Krishna will give you right. Okay. What does that mean? It means Krishna will make you look foolish in front of the devotees. If you act proud, Krishna will make you foolish. Lord Brahma said, now Lord Brahma speaks, very powerful. Very exalted lineup of personalities who are speaking. Everyone is giving their realizations. Lord Brahma said, my dear Lord, Your personality and eternal form cannot be understood by any person who is trying to know you through the different processes of acquiring knowledge. Your position is always transcendental to the material creation, whereas the empiric attempt to understand you is material, as are its objectives and instruments. So, Krishna is not understood by any attempt other than bhakti. Okay. What does the Brahma Samhita say? Vedeshu dulabham adulabham atma bhakto. That you may try to understand Krishna by your own endeavor, by karma or jnana, by your intellect, by your ability, by so many things you may try to understand Krishna, but Krishna cannot be understood. You cannot get realization of Krishna. Krishna is transcendental, and Krishna can only be understood by bhakti, by devotion. So one who has devotion, atma bhakto, devotion coming from the soul, not from the false ego. Not that we're doing our devotional service, but sometimes a lot of our devotional service is based on our false ego. Right? We're doing the service, but it's all absorbed in our false ego. I'm getting so much recognition for this. Everyone says I'm such a good cook. Everyone says I'm such a good pujari. Everyone says I'm so good at making garlands. Everyone says I lead kirtan so nicely. I can distribute so many books. I give such nice classes. I wash the pots the best. I sweep the temple room floor like that. I am the incarnation of temple floor sweepers. So this is your false ego. So much of your service is done like that. But service actually pleases Krishna when it's done from the soul, from the heart, not from the ego. It's done for Krishna's pleasure. It's coming from the soul's love for Krishna, like that. So, in order to understand Krishna, Prabhupada explains in the purport that Krishna is only understood by our service attitude. Prabhupada explains this in the Nectar of Instruction. It is by the attitude of the performer that we make advancement in Krishna consciousness. What is your attitude when you do your service? Are you doing it for Krishna's pleasure? And we see that when someone has a proper attitude when they're serving Krishna, what is the indication that someone has the right attitude when they're doing the service? Right? The indication someone has the correct attitude when they're doing the service is that they show attention to every single detail in that service. Right? This means that you have bhakti. Because you're not just cooking for Krishna, so you're paying attention to every single detail in the cooking to Krishna. You make sure you don't burn anything. You make sure everything is spiced perfectly. You make sure everything, the halibut is just sweet enough, not too sweet, not too unsweet, like that. Everything must be just perfect for Krishna's pleasure. And then when you make up the offering plate, and sometimes you see the devotees, they put flowers on the plate. Because they do extra things. When the lid comes off in front of Krishna, and Krishna sees there's the beautiful offering, right, and all the bowls are nice and full, and not half full, and there's nothing spilt everywhere, it's not messy, it's all done very nicely, right, and they're putting little flowers around, and everything's very beautiful for Krishna's pleasure. Attention to the details. This is bhakti. This is devotional service. So when you have this attitude, right, of giving everything for the pleasure of Krishna, this is bhakti, this attracts Krishna. It is the service attitude. Every single service we do must be done to the best of our ability, and then Krishna will accept it.
Sometimes we don't fill in the cup completely because they get still, and then Krishna gets wet.
Yeah. So then that's maybe being practical. Yeah, maybe that's practical. But then what is the right height? Sometimes I only fill it half. Half's not enough. Maybe three quarters. Like that. Maybe not four, but maybe three quarters. Or you could fill it completely and you could walk very slowly. Many ways to do it.
But sometimes those who cook, they don't carry.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying practically. But the point is that one must give his attention sometimes I see the offerings, like they fill the bowls of the sadhu, only like half full. Prabhupada explains that Krishna is a hungry boy. Now, how old is Krishna?
16.
Right, 16. So Krishna is hungry. Huh? So what happens? You only give him half the bowl. Not very, he has to be full. Right there. He's hungry. Right there. So there's attention to the detail.
Going back to your point earlier, when we perform devotional service with false ego, I mean, like basically to get the attention of other devotees or something like that, is that termed as fruitive activity or it's still devotional service with the proper mode?
It means it's mixed devotional service. It's not pure devotional service. So it's mixed. So then Krishna says, yeah, yatha mam prapachanti, comes to those. He says, okay, I accept what you're offering with bhakti, but I reject the false ego part. So it depends how much false ego is there. So he reciprocates accordingly. In other words, you know, if you're doing the arti, but you're doing the arti and you're thinking, oh, I'm doing the arti so nicely, you know, so much ego. Yeah, okay, Krishna takes a little bit, but then he's like, you know, there's not so much reciprocation from Krishna. But the more you can give up your material attachments, just like I told one time, I was at Pratha Kund and I was chanting my japa at Raghunath Das Goswami's Bhajan Kutia. And so I was chanting. And then one Bengali Mataji, she came. I was the only one there. And she came, she was the only one, and she came and she saw the picture of Raghunath Das Goswami and how Srimati Radharani was holding her veil over his head. It's a whole story, but I'm just telling the basics. And Krishna is also standing in the background protecting Raghunath Das. So when she saw that picture, she came, she saw the picture, and tears started to come down her cheeks just by seeing that picture. And she turned around and she spoke to me in Bengali. I didn't understand what she said. But she said something, she pointed, she said, just look. Yeah, look at Brother Rani's love for her devotee, look at Krishna's love for her devotee. And she was crying. That's bhakti. You know, nothing pretentious, not pretending, not trying to impress anyone, but love coming from the heart. So this is bhakti. You know, when we do something, we're always looking, oh, is everyone looking at me? You know, is everyone noticing me? Did everyone notice how much money I put in the donation box? Not that. So it's all material. Okay. Okay, so we'll try to get to verse 38. So we'll go a little bit more. We won't take any more questions. So. King Indra said, "My dear Lord, your transcendental form with eight hands and weapons in each of them appears for the welfare of the entire universe, and it is very pleasing to the mind and eyes. In such a form, your lordship is always prepared to punish the demons who are envious of your devotees." So Prabhupada explains that Lord Indra speaks after Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma says that Krishna is very difficult. Lord Brahma says that Lord Krishna is very difficult to understand with material senses. But Lord Indra, he speaks after Brahma. He says, yes, that is true, that he is difficult to understand. But still, by the process of bhakti, he can be approached. He can be understood. Even though he is transcendental, but there is a process to understand him. And what is that process? You know, which Prabhupada mentions within the purport. Yeah, the process is... It's not the purport I was thinking of. But I'll make the point anyway, even though it's a different purport, the Prabhupada makes this point. But the process of understanding Krishna is by hearing Krishna Katha. Right? Because when you hear Krishna Katha, if you have qualification, or if you hear Krishna's pastimes with faith, then one can approach Krishna. Otherwise Krishna is very difficult to understand. But one can purify one's consciousness and one can actually understand and realize Krishna by hearing about him. This is actually the process which is accepted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you hear the discussion between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, then Mahaprabhu said, how do we understand Krishna like that? And Ramananda Roy, he gives different steps or stages, or he gives different explanations.
Levels.
Yeah, like different levels. Or he gives like different explanations of how we can understand Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya says, this is external. This is external. Varnashram is external. He rejects so many things. But then when Ramananda Roy says, one should hear from devotees, then Mahaprabhu says, yes, this is where it begins. This is how we realize Krishna, by hearing Krishna Katha with faith, with Shraddha. Then that's how Krishna becomes revealed. Like that. Okay. The wives of the performers of the sacrifice said, my dear Lord, this sacrifice was arranged under the instruction of Brahma. But unfortunately, Lord Shiva, being angry at Daksha, devastated the entire scene. And because of his anger, the animals meant for sacrifice are lying dead. Therefore, the preparations of the yajna have been lost. Now, by the glance of your lotus eyes, the sanctity of this sacrificial arena may be again invoked. So, women by nature are naturally soft-hearted. Because the women who are the wives of the sacrificial performers, they're seeing so many animals are dead. So women, they naturally are attracted to animals. To little, like Sita was attracted to the
deer.
So it's natural for women to be attracted. So when they're seeing all the dead animals in the sacrificial arena, naturally they say to the Lord, this is not very good, so many animals are dead. Please purify everything. Please rectify everything. Bring all the animals back to life. It is not auspicious. And Prabhupada says in the purport, it is not good that animals should die unnecessarily. You cannot make advancement in spiritual life if you do not develop soft-heartedness. So many people these days, they talk about so many things, but they just eat animals. Yeah, they talk about philosophy and religion and spirituality, but they eat animals. So what is the actual... There's no realization there. Their realizations are very simplistic. You actually get realization when you develop respect for every living entity. Not that you'll kill a living entity. Think that it's acceptable to kill a living entity. Prabhupada said we should not even kill mosquitoes. Unless they bite you. If they bite you, then maybe you can. Okay. But you should not kill. Prabhupada says you should not even step on an ant. Okay. So this should be the consciousness of the baby. Mahim shatsava bhutani. Prabhupada says the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. One should not commit violence to any living entity. Okay. The sages pray. Dear Lord, your activities are most wonderful, and although you do everything by your different potencies, you are not at all attached to such activities. You are not even attached to the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by the great demigods like Brahma, who pray to achieve her mercy. So Krishna never acts for any material purpose. Krishna simply acts for what?
For the pleasure.
Yeah, for the pleasure of his devotees. Or in other words, Krishna only acts for his pleasure. This is the realization of the sages, that he does not act for any material cause. Krishna has no impetus to act for anything material. We act for something material. Just like we see some food that we like, right, then immediately everyone runs. Just like they cook pizza for the offerings, and then everyone lines up. Right, that's for us. Right? It's for our satisfaction. But Krishna has no he has no material motivation. He only acts for his own pleasure. Like that. Everyone else in the world acts for some material reason, but Krishna is beyond material motivation in his activities. The sitters prayed, like an elephant that has suffered in a forest fire, but can forget all its troubles by entering the river. Our minds, O Lord, always merge in the nectarian river of your transcendental pastimes, and they desire never to leave such transcendental bliss, which is as good as the pleasure of merging in the Absolute. So actually this is the purport where Prabhupada mentions about hearing Krishna Katha, like that. So Prabhupada mentions that when one gets an actual taste for a devotional service for Krishna Katha, the result is that one loses all attraction to pious and impious activities. This is actually the proof that we have a taste for Krishna consciousness, because we no longer have any attraction to material activities, whether they're pious activities or impious activities. People in the material world are attracted to impious activities or pious activities. The devotee, he doesn't give a fig, as Prabhupada says, for either. He's simply absorbed in one thing, and that is giving Krishna pleasure. And then I'll read one more verse for tonight. I was going to go up to verse 38, but there's too many points here. So I think I'll go to verse 36. The wife of Daksha prayed as follows: "My dear Lord, it is very fortunate that you have appeared in this arena of sacrifice. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, and I request that you be pleased on this occasion. The sacrificial arena is not beautiful without you, just as the body is not beautiful without the head." So, she gives a very nice example. This is Daksha's wife. She's saying that if you do not worship Krishna, then you are not beautiful. You may be beautiful physically, but there's no beauty unless you're attached to Krishna. Then you actually become attractive. Just like Mother Jagatarini, she was a famous movie actress before she became a devotee. And when she became a devotee, in the newspaper, they put a picture of her before she was a devotee, and then the picture of after she was a devotee. And before she was a devotee, she looked very sophisticated. And after she was a devotee, she looked very simple. But when Prabhupada saw the photos, Prabhupada said, "Now she looks happy." So, materially speaking, you may be attractive, but there's no actual attraction, because until you become connected to Krishna, then you become beautiful. So same as Daksha. Then, unfortunately, because he had no attraction to Krishna, then he lost his auspiciousness, he lost his beauty, he lost his head. So one actually becomes attractive when one is connected to Krishna. Otherwise, if you're not connected to Krishna, everything in your life becomes inauspicious. Like that. Okay, so we'll stop there. And tomorrow night we'll continue from verse 37. We have to finish the chapter tomorrow night, and then next Monday night also. So we'll go through up to about verse 50 or so. Okay. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.